Okay, well, welcome, everybody. I just wanted to give a few minutes while people could find parking. I understand the parking situation is not good here. We had trouble here getting there at 2. Thank you for coming. I'm Eric Gillis, project manager with the California State Lands Commission. This is a public meeting for the revised PRC 421 recommissioning project draft environmental impact report. The California State Lands Commission is the lead agency under the California Environmental Quality Act. We prepared a new draft EIR on this project. We prepared a draft EIR in 2007. We never finalized that EIR. There's a lot of changes in environmental settings and the project itself that we prepared and circulated a new notice of preparation in March of this year. And then following that, we prepared with AMIC Environmental as our consultant, a draft environmental impact report on the project that was released to the public on October 18th for a 60-day review period. The close of comment is December 20th, a week from Friday. The purpose of this meeting is basically we're staff of the State Lands Commission and we're taking comments on the draft document that's being circulated. We'll take those comments today. We have two meetings, one today at right now at 3 o'clock and then one at 6 o'clock for folks that couldn't make this earlier meeting. And then after comments are received, after the 20th, then we'll be preparing a final EIR that will be taken to our commission sometime in early next year. So today is just will be a presentation on the draft document, the project itself, and some of the major impacts and other critical issues. We have Rita Bright here with AMAC, who we've hired to help prepare the environmental document. And I also have here is Holly Wire, which is a deputy project manager with the California State Lands Commission. And so with that, I'll go ahead and turn it over to Rita, and she'll have a PowerPoint presentation on the proposed project as well as contents of the EIR. Following her presentation, we'll go ahead and open it up to public comments. If you've filled out a speaker slip, if you could hand those in so we could call you off after the presentation, that'd be great. Thank you. Okay, Rita.
Thank you, Eric and Holly. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Rita Bright, and as Eric mentioned, I'm an environmental consultant, senior CEQA project manager with AMEC, and we prepared the environmental impact report for the State Lands Commission. There's a few things. I do have some sets of the hard copy of the PowerPoint that was out in the entrance lobby, and you're free to take those. And we also do have an easel with a one of the enlargements of a figure of some of the key components of the project. So you're welcome to look at that as well at any time. With that, we'll just go ahead and launch into the highlights of the draft environmental impact report. So as Eric mentioned, our objective of this public hearing is to provide an overview of the project, the issues of your concern, summary of the project impacts and alternatives, and to receive your public comments on the adequacy of the draft EIR, including the project impacts, the alternatives, the mitigation measures, our approach. This is part of the CEQA process that we satisfy. We hold the public meeting to be CEQA compliant. So in terms of PRC 421, the revised project overview, the key components of this project involve the reactivation of well 421-2. And as most of you might know, there are two piers that extend off of the coast. I'm going to try to use a few gadgets here, so bear with me. Along the coastline, There are two piers. One is known as PRC 421-1, and one is PRC 421-2. And those both have elements within this project. For the reactivation of well 421-2, some of the main components include a new electric submersible pump in the well, including well safety equipment, and there would be repairs to reinforce the deck and the caissons of the pier. There would be involved some modifications to the Elwood onshore facility, which is located in this region here. And those modifications would be to accommodate the project and involve installation of production metering and process monitoring and installation of a new pig receiver and connecting piping for the processing. This is a cross-section of some of the key components of the project involving the pipelines and the cables between PRC 421-2 and the Elwood onshore facility. It would involve using the existing 6-inch pipeline extended to Elwood onshore facility, and that would become a protective sleeve of a 3-inch new flow line that would be inserted within it. There would be power for the well for the 421-2 equipment through an existing power cable. And this shows you the location. This is the access drive, cross-section of the access drive. And this is some of the power sources and how they would be installed subsurface into that easement and the existing seawall and bulkhead. And this is where the line would be itself, the flow line. Also involved would be the Pier 421-1 pier and well, and part of the project component is to plug and decommission this well. So some of the activities are highlighted. It would be to decommission the pier itself, the caissons, also remove the piping and other types of support facilities. So this would be an abandonment and kind of a reclamation plan involving the 421-1 pier and well. Also, just to summarize, the historic characterization of production on the site and what the goal would be, or one of the project objectives of this project as well, would be to have an approximate yield of 50 BOPDs after the initial 150 barrels of oil per day. And the initial 150 barrels of oil a day would probably be the initial flow given the existing status in this area for and the repressurization involved. So there may be an initial output that's much higher than the sustained output, about threefold is what is estimated. Just to summarize the key issues of public concern, there's many comments that were expressed, but we, in going through the scoping meeting comments, there seem to be some major themes and major issues of public concern, and those are, does Venneco have a vested right to resume production of PRC 421-2? And will the project, if approved, extend the life of the Elwood onshore facility? What repressurization has occurred so far, and what is the risk of well failure in terms of the safety issues? Does the reactivated well represent a new source? And why can't the production be piped to Las Flores Canyon for processing as opposed to being processed on site? With regards to vested rights, Venneco's position is that it has a existing legal right under its current contract with the California State Lands Commission to resume production of oil and gas lease of PRC 421. The point is that their legal principle of rights is a distinct contractual issue. We don't see that this as an environmental issue under CEQA. We see this being resolved in the legal arena and not as part of the CEQA review of this project. So the issue of these rights addresses the resumption of operations, a discussion which will continue and be summarized and presented in the staff report to the commission as other information which may be presented to the agency in accordance with CEQA guidelines 15121. In regards to the issue of the life of the Elwood onshore facilities, the proposed project would not extend the life of the Elwood onshore facilities. In the event that Platform Holly production ceases and Platform Holly is decommissioned, PRC 421 production would also cease and its facilities would be decommissioned. And that would be contained as a condition of project approval, if the project is approved. So the project itself would not be extending the life of the Elwood onshore facility, and it would just be driven by the life of Platform Holly. There has been a lot of discussion and interest and concern regarding the issue of repressurization. And this has gone back to studies of over a decade since 2001, when the State Lands Commission staff determined that the Vaqueros Reservoir had repressurized. And the figure, this is also in the EIR, but the figure in the PowerPoint shows the continuous trend of increase in wellhead pressure since 1988. This increase in pressure in the Vaqueros Reservoir is thought to have caused leaking in both PRC 421 wellheads in the year 2000 after being shut in for 6 years. And in response to the detection of these leaks, Veneco installed a temporary pipeline at well 421-2. When this well was subsequently reopened, it flowed an estimated total of 17,000 barrels of nearly pure oil over the next 10 months. So this goes back to that earliest graph in our presentation where it shows the initial amount of flow and then once that pressure is relieved somewhat, the output being less, more approximately 50 barrels per day. Both the engineers with Veneco and State Lands Commission have determined that repressurization is most likely caused by aquifer influx. In other words, there's natural groundwater movement that occurs, and that is a major contributor to the repressurization that is occurring with the addition of water movement. At least 21 of the 72 offshore wells drilled into the Vaqueros Reservoir from piers had potential deficiencies in their historic abandonment procedures, which could also make them more likely to leak. And then this issue, just even identifying the precise location of some of these offshore wells is problematic given the age of the wells and the depth of the wells and the amount of record keeping and knowledge of the standards that were used at the time of their installation. Currently, there is no active well penetrating the reservoir into which pressure testing equipment can be inserted. As was one of the comments in the scoping meeting comments is perhaps an alternative or a method would be first to test for repressurization. And the difficulty with that approach is there is no other source to test from, given 421-2 right now is capped, and there is no other active well that is within the Vaqueros Reservoir to test from. So the proposed, one of the proposed components of this project would be to take tests from well 421-2. A static reservoir pressure will be taken from this well prior to resumption of production. Those measurements will be obtained on an annual basis during the Elwood off onshore facility shutdown, and to be used in the analysis of the status of repressurization. So this activity can occur as part of the project. It will occur, and it will be monitored throughout the life of the project. The question is this a new source? Is this a net increase from the historical permitted uses? And the oil and gas processing would, in fact, not expand beyond the currently permitted quantities. Improvements to the Elwood onshore facility to allow PRC production may be considered an enhancement, an enlargement, and expansion. An extension of the existing facility's nonconforming use status, and expansions of nonconforming uses are prohibited by the Goleta Municipal Code. In other words, there are a lot of zoning ordinances, including Goleta's, which have certain limitations on nonconforming structures and uses and facilities. And that would be a planning and zoning issue. The EIR recognizes that resumption of production at PRC 421 would be inconsistent with the City of Goleta's general plan, coastal plan policies, including land use 10.1 and 10.4. And as discussed in more detail in the land use section of the draft EIR, this has been identified as a significant and avoidable Class 1 impact. Questions have been raised about why not have the production and the processing occur at Las Flores Canyon. PRC 421 production would remain in the three-phase state of oil, gas, and water before transporting it to Las Flores Canyon. Therefore, the existing and recently constructed Pipeline 96 cannot be used for this alternative, since that pipeline transports oil and not a a combined state of oil, gas, and water. As such, the most feasible way to utilize Las Flores Canyon in an environmental alternative would to be require construction of a new pipeline that would run from 421-2 to Las Flores Canyon. And since it would not be processed at Elwood, it would bypass it. It would parallel, most likely, the existing 96, Line 96, along Highway 101, and it would have similar construction, operational, short-term, long-term types of impacts associated with a Line 96 modification project. It would also require installation of larger pumps at 421-2 and new equipment at Las Flores Canyon. This alternative was considered in the EIR as an infeasible alternative based on the extensive construction impacts and costs. I'd like to just summarize the significant and unavoidable impacts that are identified in the EIR. There were 16 significant and unavoidable impacts. 13 are related to the potential for oil spills at Pier 421-2, the flow lines, or along Line 96. And those include impacts to aesthetics, to safety, to hydrology, water sources and water quality, to both marine and terrestrial biological resources, to land use, planning, and recreation. Three of the class one or significant and unavoidable impacts are related to increased processing at the Elwood onshore facility or to additional demands on fire protection services. And relatedly, those impacts are associated with land use, planning and recreation, public services, and safety. And in the resource area categories within the EIR, this PowerPoint just identifies by resource area the number of significant and mitigable impacts. And there are four, just in case anyone is not familiar with the terminology, a significant and unavoidable impact is that no amount of feasible mitigation reduces the impacts upon the environment to less than significant. A significant, potentially significant and mitigable impact is one where there are feasible mitigation identified, and it is the recommendation of the consultants in preparing it that those mitigations could reduce the impacts to less than significant based on the thresholds, the CEQA guideline thresholds being used. And as you can see, there are a number of impacts at that level which require mitigation, including to geological resources, safety, hazardous materials, air quality and greenhouse gases, hydrology, water resources and water quality, marine biological resources, terrestrial biological resources, public services, transportation and circulation, aesthetics and visual resources, and cultural resources. I'd just like to briefly summarize the key alternatives that were considered and analyzed or considered and dismissed as part of the EIR analysis. One must, in analyzing a project under CEQA, consider a reasonable range of alternatives when preparing an EIR. And one alternative must always include the no project alternative. In this preparation, the EIR, we have done so. We've included the no project alternative as well as the project that was analyzed. We looked at an alternative of oil processing on Pier 421-2. We've looked at reinjection at Platform Holly as an alternative. And we considered and dismissed alternatives, as you see highlighted on this PowerPoint, which include the no project alternative with pressure testing, drilling from the Elwood onshore facility, drilling from Platform Holly, condensed production schedule, offshore oil processing on Platform Holly, transportation by of production by truck, recommissioning using historic production methods, and processing PRC 421 oil at Las Flores Canyon. Oftentimes, when dismissing a alternative, one must look at, again, the feasibility, compare it with reasonably meeting most of the project objectives, consider the ability to feasibly develop the project, and also compare it with the project in terms of whether it could result in comparatively less environmental impacts or similar impacts or more. So for many of these, it is either one or multiple prongs of the decision to dismiss those alternatives. Some may be that they don't meet the project description or even approach meeting the project objective, and also can result in more impacts than the project. Based on the analysis, the proposed project has been identified as the environmentally superior alternative. The no project alternative would not allow for pressure testing, so it too could result in a risk of spills from the repressurization status. The proposed project would best reduce significant and unavoidable impacts to safety, hydrology, and water quality, biological resources, recreation, land use, and aesthetics compared to the other alternatives. However, these impacts would also remain significant and unavoidable. this concludes my overview of what is in the draft EIR. Current status on this, again, as Eric mentioned, we want to hear your comments on the EIR. And the primary purpose of this is to note your comments, receive your comments, not necessarily to engage in a debate, but just to receive your comments and listen to you, actively listen to you. Another way to provide your comments, if you don't or aren't prepared or would rather prepare them in writing, is to submit them, as you see on the email, sequacomments@slc.ca.gov. And that would be submitted to the attention of Eric Gillis, the project manager. And you can also fax or send the letter to Eric as well, and the information is provided on the screen. I'll leave this on here just for a few minutes, so you can write this down if you need to.
I'd like to just add that when you do, if you do submit via email, put in the subject line PRC 421 Recommissioning Project. We use that web or that email address for other multiple CEQA documents, so that way we know which comment goes to which document. We have three out right now under review. And then with that, I'll go ahead and open it to public comment. We have, I believe, 8 speaker slips. And then we'll just go through the list. If does anybody have any more? Okay. If you could bring it up, please. Thank you. Okay. Well, we'll call up the first speaker, Linda Kropp, and then I'll have Carla Frisk, followed by Fran Farina.
Thank you and good afternoon. My name is Linda Kropp. I'm the chief counsel of the Environmental Defense Center, and we represent Get Oil Out, Los Padres Sierra Club, Citizens Planning Association, and Citizens for Goleta Valley. EDC and our clients have been monitoring this issue since 1994, when there was an oil spill from the pier and production was shut down. We have a lot of concerns about the project, of course, but I understand that the focus of this hearing today is on the draft environmental impact report, and so we will limit our comments to those issues. We have comments regarding the project description, the alternatives, and the impacts and mitigation measures. With respect to the project description, the first thing we noted is that the project description in the EIR is not clear or consistent. And doing some background research, we came across the fact that in the notice of preparation for the EIR, the life of the project was estimated to be 12 years. In the EIR itself, it's estimated to be 20 years in some places. In other places, it's estimated to be at least 20 years or a minimum of 20 years. It's very important to know how long this project is going to continue to be able to understand the severity of the impacts. Knowing a minimum time period for the project is not adequate. We need to know what the maximum extent of this project is to fully ascertain all of the impacts for public disclosure. So we recommend that the draft EIR be revised to clearly state the full life of the project so that impacts can be adequately analyzed and understood. We're also concerned that the project objective is improperly narrow and thus constrains the range of alternatives that are analyzed in the EIR. The overall objective of this project is to extract oil and gas for a supply of energy. And there are certainly a lot of alternatives that would provide the same amount of energy without the significant impacts from this project. Even with an energy production project, the EIR summarily dismisses alternatives that we had asked to be analyzed in the EIR. And the first is the pressurization testing, the no project with pressure testing alternative. In the EIR, there is an allegation that pressurization is building, and so it's important to allow commercial production in order to ascertain how much pressure is building up and what the source is. But if you look at the EIR in the graph that was on the screen, for example, there's a pressure buildup both before and after the shutdown. So it's not clear that lack of production causes a pressure buildup. The pressure was building up before that. Moreover, after the 2001 depressurization, there's no evidence that there's been any pressure buildup. That pressure buildup actually was identified through an APCD annual testing or monitoring inspection, and APCD continues to conduct monitoring and inspections, and there has been no other incident of pressurization. So it's been 12 plus years since then. So we're not convinced that there is a pressurization problem. If there is, we think that there are ways to test that without allowing full commercial production. So we would still like that alternative to be fully analyzed in the EIR. The second alternative that we had requested for analysis in the EIR was processing at Las Flores Canyon. And that's pretty straightforward. The Elwood Onshore facility is a non-conforming facility. It's not supposed to be perpetuated. I understand that the EIR recommends a condition stating that production from this project would not extend the life, but nevertheless, we need to know whether or not this production is considered oil that can even be processed at the EOF, and that information is not included in the EIR. So that being said, it's really important. In fact, the EIR mentions that processing at the EOF is potentially inconsistent with city policies, which means it can't proceed. So it's really incumbent that the EIR does analyze processing at Las Flores Canyon, which is the sole designated consolidated processing site on the South Coast. There are some conclusions in the EIR about why that's not feasible, but there's no factual evidence to support those conclusions. With respect to the impact analysis, we have focused on land use and terrestrial biological resources. As you'll see in our written comments that we will be submitting under the section dealing with terrestrial biological resources, we are aware of some other resources that are in the project area that have not been identified in the EIR, so we will bring those to your attention. We also are concerned that some of the mitigation measures, especially for restoration, are open-ended and don't contain performance standards, so they violate CEQA's requirement that mitigation be known and certain and enforceable. And finally, within the land use impact discussion section, as I mentioned before, this section does not clarify whether or not, in fact, processing at the EOF is or is not allowed under the city's general plan and zoning ordinance, and that information is critical to that impact assessment. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda. Next up is Carla Farina, and then we'll have Jenna Driscoll.
Good afternoon. My name is Carla Frisk, and I'm here today representing Get Oil Out. And it's always hard to follow Linda Kroc because she does such a great job, so I'm not going to try to repeat everything she said. I'm sure you'll be happy to know. I do think there's a few issues, though, that it's really important to hit on because they are so critical. But before I do those, I would just like to make a comment that for Get Oil Out, I've been following this project since 2004, along with many other projects that I've appeared before State Lands Commission staff on, projects in Santa Barbara County. And this is the first time ever Get Oil Out didn't get a hard copy of the draft EIR. And while I understand that there are costs associated with that for the groups that constantly come to these hearings, or don't miss a hearing, are constantly here, I don't think it's unreasonable that those groups should not get a draft. It is very difficult. You can't write on your computer screen and take notes. So that means basically you're put in a position of having to print everything out. And I did not print the entire document out, but I know Ms. Kropp did, and I just couldn't do that. So I would I'm really pleased to see that you're offering hard copies of the final EIR, but I think the draft is almost more important because that's where you take all your notes and go back and look and see if what the changes were. So anyway, I hope for the next round we'll be able to consider that. I want to begin by saying that the impacts of this project are different than just about any other project that we've testified before you on. Most of those other projects are significantly offshore, while this one is right there, directly in the surf zone, probably in a location that has the most potential for environmental disaster related to oil spills. The implications of a spill in that area with surf pounding in the shore and dispersing all over the beaches is, you know, is huge, and I think that it comes to no surprise that 13 of the class one of the 16 class one impacts are related to an oil spill. And this is exacerbated because you have a lot of aging facilities out there. Those facilities have been out there for a long time and they're old, and who knows what's going to happen when they start, if they are able to move forward and do this project, what's going to actually they're going to find when they start to try to fix those facilities. Given that GOO was born following the massive 1969 oil spill, it always goes without saying that the risk of an oil spill is really the greatest concern of our organization. That being said, we were quite surprised at the fact that the objective of this project, the objective section, failed to include the one objective that we had been repeatedly told was critical to the project. We need this project to reduce pressurization of the field that could result in an oil spill if it was allowed to build up as it did, I guess it was in 2000. Only the applicant's very narrow objective is included. And I think this is, again, an unusual thing that's related to this project. We've seen many other projects come and go before the State Lands Commission, for example, the Caron project, where they've had to do years of testing on Platform Hogan and have had to submit, feels like a bazillion studies to you all, never knowing whether their project would ever be approved. That was no guarantee of project approval. So it doesn't seem really unfair to ask Fenneco to do some more get more information on this whole repressurization issue. But the State Lands Commission has failed to require the applicant to submit any definitive evidence that shows that repressurization is indeed occurring and at what rate and what the cause is. And I think that's just such a critical part of this project. I don't see how it can be divorced from the project. As a result, there's basically no discussion in the EIDR, very little discussion about repressurization, how it's occurring, why, and what it means for the project. How, then, can the public possibly understand if this project will permanently remedy the problem if it does exist? And if it does exist, we'd be surprised if Fenneco would continue to pump oil from this reservoir just to prevent or relieve repressurization once it's no longer economic for them to do so. So possibly get this project and still be stuck with this problem of repressurization, then what? The project simply should not move forward without information on this issue. Until that information is available to get oil out, I think we would have a really hard time having any positive feelings about getting this oil out and getting the project completed and decommissioned and all that if we're still going to be left with the problem of repressurization. Finally, just one little thing I wanted to add about decommissioning of wells 421-1. This is, again, an area with active surf. There's a lot of sand that comes in and goes out, and we want to be sure that on both that decommissioning and then later, which I know will be the subject of a different environmental document, that those wells are capped and plugged so far down that there's no chance that that's ever going to daylight, because I think, Eric, you're aware of the fact that we had multiple problems out in Elwood, and the public ended up, in many cases, footing the bill to have those problems fixed years and years later, and we don't want a repeat of that. So I just want to end with start at the beginning, the project description. I found the statement in the executive summary, page 16, that 20 years is relatively short, a very interesting observation. When I'm considering my own mortality, I may not even be around in 20 years, so I really don't consider 20 years to be relatively short. In any case, I would completely agree that the maximum life expectancy of the project must be clearly and consistently stated throughout the document so the impacts of the project can be accurately analyzed and reported. and hopefully you'll remove the relatively short. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla. Carly, did you get a hard copy? We have hard copies here.
I would love to have one. Is there one out there?
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Carla. Fran, then Jenna, and then after Jenna, Dr. Ingberg Cox. Yeah.
Good afternoon. My name is Fran Farina, F-A-R-I-N-A, and I'm representing Los Padres Sierra Club. We, too, are a client of the Environmental Defense Center, and our comprehensive comments will be submitted by EDC by your deadline of December the 20th. I'd like to focus on two things, more on the repressurization, but also in the presentation from Ms. Bright, and I appreciate you being here today, and Mr. Gillis, always nice to see you again. on your eighth slide, when you talk about the issues of public concern, I feel that when you're trying to make comments on a document and they're brushed off, it's difficult to feel that you can make substantive comments. For example, on the issue of vested rights, if there isn't a vested right, then, you know, what's the issue? Similarly with the city, if you cannot get approval from the city because of the nonconforming use issue, then why are we all spinning our wheels? So it's as if the cart has definitely been put in front of the horse, and everybody is spending time and money, including Venico, on something that may never occur regardless. Also on the project life, where you said it won't extend the life of the EOF, I don't get much comfort out of this, because I've seen so many of the platforms from the 1960s rehabilitated with new uses that then extend their lives for another 30 to 50 years. And so our attachment to Holly, Platform Holly, doesn't give me a whole lot of comfort. And whether it's a new source, I believe the issue is not are you within the current permit limits, which we know this production at 50 barrels per day on average, which is minuscule, you'd be within the permit limits. Is it a new source of oil? And that definitely has an impact, and it is an issue on the nonconforming use issue, and I do not believe that that was properly addressed. On Las Flores, it seems to be sloughed off because of cost. But the reality is it may be a more feasible alternative when you look at if you cannot process at the EOF because of nonconforming use, then you will not have an option but to look at what the cost and involvement would be in moving a line out to Las Flores. Now I want to go back to repressurization, because I am the person who communicated with our local Santa Barbara County Air Pollution Control District, and they do annual inspections. And so they do two things. They have inspectors who look visually to see if there is any evidence of leak, and they also have an OVA, which is an organic vapor analyzer, to detect if there is any leakage. And lo and behold, 2003, no leaks. 2004, no leaks. 2005, no leaks. 2006, no leaks. 2007, no leaks. Are you starting to get the picture? 2008, no leaks. 2009, no leaks. 2010, no leaks. Staff shortage for 2 years. So I'm not aware that they did any testing. However, as recently as March 22nd, 2013, the inspector was out there again, and visually and with the OVA, no leaks detected. So on this high concern, and I've heard it from State Lands Commission staff since the day that they visited this area to discuss their concerns with Lease 421, repressurization being very high on their list, there's no evidence of it. And without it, I think it's hard to justify that that's a reason why you're moving forward. And then what you had in your documents today, on The engineers, this was slide 13. I happen to have spent the last, oh, God, almost 30 years dealing with water. And when you tell me that repressurization is likely caused by aquifer influx, what that tells me is that in wet years, there is more water that will naturally go out to the ocean because that's the way it's going to flow. And in dry years, there will be less. And I think the bottom line question that we're really asking is that even if this community goes through with all of the risks associated with this project in the surf zone, which is unique, and in an area surrounded by sensitive habitat, what guarantee do we have that it's not going to happen again? And I think that that should weigh upon your minds. Again, thank you for being in our community. We do appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Fran. We have Jenna, then Dr. Cox, and then out following her, we'll have Barbara Massey.
My name is Jenna Driscoll, and I'm the Watershed and Marine Program Associate with Santa Barbara Channel Keeper. And first off, I wanted to echo a lot of the comments that we've already heard about the lack of evidence for repressurization and the need for more analysis of the no-project alternative with pressure testing, and also a better analysis of the legal issues that this project may be facing from the get-go, rather than trying to spin our wheels like the last speaker just said, for an issue that may not get very far. And Channel Keeper has several concerns with this project, and we will be sending you a more detailed comment letter within the next week. But I want to focus on two key issues today. And the first is that Channel Keeper is really concerned that a hazardous material analysis has not been done for this project yet. The draft EIR says that it will happen before the removal of Pier 421. But there's a caveat in there that if the analysis shows that the hazardous material, the removal of the hazardous material, if there is any, would impact or threaten the Pier 4212, that the hazardous material would be left there until the end of the life of the project, which is pretty concerning. And so we feel that the EIR should include that hazardous material analysis now. That way, if that situation does arise, that removing that material would threaten the pier, that the EIR could analyze how to remove that properly, and the Venico could also include construction that they would need to do in case that pier was threatened, and that could be included in the EIR and analyzed. And as you know, the purpose of an EIR is to make an informed decision on all of the environmental impacts, and not having a hazardous materials analysis is a big flaw that we see in this EIR. The second issue that I want to address is mitigation measure TBIO-1B. It really needs some clarification for us. Throughout the draft EIR, it states that the construction activities will be using existing roads. But then in this mitigation measure, it says that the project biological observer will establish corridors, 15 to 30-foot corridors within sensitive habitat areas. And that suggests that it wouldn't just be isolated to road access. So I think that needs to be clarified a little bit more about where exactly construction is going to be going. If it is true that they're going into these sensitive habitat areas, those should be identified in the EIR, and the corridors should be established and mapped within the EIR, because that's a whole new set of issues if you're sending large, heavy equipment through these areas. And also the equipment that would be going and traveling through those sensitive areas should be listed rather than just the bulk of the earlier in the EIR, it states all of the large heavy machinery, but specifically which ones would be going through those sensitive habitat areas. And again, thank you for letting us speak here today, and I will be sending you our full comments later. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. We have Dr. Cox, then we'll have Barbara Massey, followed by Elizabeth Crawford.
Do I have a time limit to speak?
Yeah, 3 to 5 minutes.
And mine goes 7 minutes.
If you could try to keep down to five, that'd be great.
Okay.
Thank you.
My name is Dr. Ingeborg, Ingeborg Cox, COX. I am a physician, and my specialty is occupational and environmental medicine. I am retired, and right now I will be speaking for myself, but I also am the representative of the 3rd District, the Citizens Advisory Committee at the Air Pollution Control District. The project is located in a naturally corrosive and erosive environment. Weathering of soils, rocks, and structures is active, and there is constant action by wind and waves. There have been emergency repairs to the structures in 2001, 2004, and 2011. However, the design plans do not include the corrosion protection specifications. Why? You have an old facility that appears to not have been kept up, as otherwise one would not expect so frequent emergency repairs. If you allow the oil, gas, water, emulsions pumped from Pier 421-2 to be sent to the Elwood onshore facility and commingled with production from Platform Holly, in my opinion, this has to be considered an expansion and extension of the EOF. And because the EOF is a non-conforming use, that is prohibited by the Goleta Municipal Code, Section 35-160. The crude oil from Holly is sour, with large amounts of hydrogen sulfide, and it is heavier. The PRC crude oil is sweet, but has higher potential for explosion due to the presence of higher light ends. Why is the mixing of the two even being considered? At least 21 of the 72 offshore wells drilled into the Vaquero Reservoir had potential deficiencies in their abandonment procedures. Is Venoco planning to explore this area as well 421-2 position is at the crest of the Vaquero Reservoir? What will be the effect on these deficient abandoned wells? According to Figure 2-3, there are 9 wells near PRC 421 and 3 in State Lease 421, abandoned under antiquated standards. The potential for concern is the inadequate volume of cement in the casing shoe plugs. Some wells have no shoe plug at all, and some have no surface plugs. Also, the existing plugs do not meet current standard and practices. What will happen to these wells when 25 steel piles are going to be added into 25-foot deep holes drilled into the Monterey shale bedrock, coursing around the Casson using a drilling rig? Why has the state allowed for these wells to be abandoned this way and no remediation is being done? The draft EIR states that no oil storage facilities would be available at the Plains All-American Pipeline, Coastal Pipeline. If for whatever reason, that means Las Flores, if for whatever reason they are not operating, the report mentions that the 2,000-barrel tanks at the Elwood Onshore Facility could only store 1 to 2 days of production from Holly and PRC combined. Production from Holly is currently less than 5,000 barrels per day. The storage mentioned is not enough for even Platform Holly. How will this work? The Monterey Formation and the soils that overlie it are considered geologically unstable and have the potential for slope failure and landslide. What will be the impact of a 45-ton mobile crane in this area? Also, if the coastal bluff experiences slope failure, the pipeline in the access road will be damaged. Hydrocarbon contamination has been identified at the pier approach area of Pier 421-2. Why is the cleanup of this area not part of the currently proposed project? Any hazardous materials investigation should be done now, not in 20 years, since soil contamination affects areas nearby. 4 wetlands are located near the project site. Bell Canyon and 3 wetland areas are supported by SIPs located along the toe of the bluff, adjacent to the project access road. It appears that during this rain year, Bell Canyon and Devereaux Creek exceeded the maximum contaminant standards of copper, mercury, and zinc. Where are these contaminants coming from? Policy CE6 of the City of Goleta General Plan Coastal Land Use Plan states, preserve and protect the biological integrity of marine habitats and resources within and adjacent to Goleta. There is a rocky intertidal habitat within the project vicinity. This habitat is designated as environment-sensitive habitat by the City of Goleta General Plan, the Santa Barbara Local Coastal Plan, and the UCSB Long Range Development Plan. These habitats have to be protected accordingly to this policy. Policy CE1 states, preserve and protect the biological integrity of marine habitats and resources within and adjacent to Goleta. Also, the immediate project vicinity supports the Elwood Coast largest kelp bed. It is over 50 acres and begins 500 feet offshore of the existing caisson. Rocky subtidal habitat supporting giant kelp occurs also in the eastern portion offshore of Pier 421-2. Under cumulative impacts, the bluffs, the hideaway, the future retirement home are not even mentioned. Development activity at PRC 421 will change the character of the region, and I believe it would be detrimental to the area. The no project alternative with pressure testing should not have been eliminated, in my opinion. Thank you, and I will send you my entire comments.
Thank you. So we have Barbara Massey, Elizabeth Crawford, Jean Holmes, and then Margaret Connell.
Barbara Massey. I must start out by saying I support the comments of all the previous speakers, and now you're going to get the average citizen's comments. It should be clear to everyone that the draft EIR that we are discussing today is for Venico's request for, quote, return offshore oil and gas lease number 421 to oil production from an existing shoreline well, end of quote. They are concerned about repressurization of the well. They want to make money from additional oil production. If Venico and the State Lands Commission are truly concerned about repressurization of Pier 421, they should be processing an abandonment and restoration project for the piers. The public has never seen any proof that Venico has a legal right to resume production on lease 421. The State Lands Commission saying it isn't, that it's so, isn't proof. This issue should be legally established prior to any further action on this project. A staff report to the State Lands Commission is not adequate information for the public. Not all viable alternatives have been reviewed. The no project alternative with pressure testing should be the environmentally preferred alternative, not discarded by claiming lack of nexus. This would be a good time to permanently answer the repressurization issue for this lease. The State Lands Commission should require pressure testing of any questionable wells. This project opens up the potential for future fracking at Pier 421, which currently would require no EIR or other regulations. There is also the potential for fracking to increase seismic activity in the area. Under no circumstances should 421 oil be processed at the EOF. It would violate Goleta's general plan and require permits for which the findings cannot be made. Let's be honest. Venico isn't concerned about repressurization of 421-2. They are using this as an excuse to recommission the 421 piers. And they are using the decommissioning of 421-1 as a token to the community. This draft EIR has been written to give Venico the project it wants. The public expects the State Lands Commission to protect their rights, not be agents for Venico. Both piers should have been abandoned and restored years ago. The no project alternative and the no project with pressure testing alternative are the only acceptable alternatives. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So we have Elizabeth Crawford, Jean Holmes, and then Margaret Connell.
Hi, thank you.
My name is Elizabeth Crawford. I'm a recent resident of Goleta, and I'm deeply surprised at this whole project and these hearings, although I have certainly had two of my property checks cashed this year. City of Goleta, State, Venico, nobody has notified us about that. So that is deeply concerning and actually illegal. So anyway, huge stakeholder, deep concerns, a couple of questions. Regarding any benefit that the community would get from this, I understand that Venico owes California $9.5 million in oil royalties that the State Lands Commission is actually suing them to obtain these back royalties that they are fighting us taxpayers on. So I cannot believe that the state would undertake consideration of another project like this while that entity is in such arrears that you guys have to go to court to obtain the taxes that they promised somebody somewhere that they would pay. Shocked, and that should stop it right there. Number two, I did only a little bit of researching, and I found out that since at least 2009, Venico and its CEO, Tony Marquez in particular, has gone up and pretty much consolidated all of the loose holdings down south of Carpinteria up to the Monterey shale fields. This guy took his company from public to private, and he attempted to purchase all of the wells as his private property. This is one man out of Denver who has been doing this for the past 5 years up and down this coast. You can't not know about this guy. I just found out about him. You clearly have been fighting him for years. And this is just another in a latest string of card tricks that this guy plays. On to pressurization. I have just spent the last 12 years being involved in driving the community investigation and cleanup into the Boeing Santa Susana Field Lab, which is a nuclear experiment, meltdown, and rocket testing site, which involves Department of Energy, Department of Justice, NASA, Boeing, and every single entity in the various states that the Department of Energy left its waste behind in. So I happen to know more than any civilian should know about pressure testing, flow testing, aquifer influx into certain areas of pools of contamination, and the state not requiring the developer to do any of the tests into the off-site communities in order to see if that contamination has been flowing into our areas. So, unfortunately, this is all too fresh and, unfortunately, untrue. I am hearing that, number one, there is no evidence of pressurization. In fact, there is evidence of no pressurization. And I forget who said it. Lack of data. Let's see. Lack of proof is, something. Anyway, there is proof of no pressurization. There is no proof of pressurization. And I hear, I'm sorry, I thought you worked for Venico, no offense. We have looked into this. There is only one well. We don't think that, since the only well to open up and check the pressure on is the one that Tony Marquez and his private company wants to do commercial testing on. For $800 to $2,500, you can drill a piezometer well. It's a pressure tester. It tests gas, soil gas flow, pressure, air pressure, water pressure, vapor. You can even do little grabs and bring up sediment. I would at least hope that you would require the developer to spend, what, $5,000, $10,000 to drill a few wells in the area that they say is coming under pressure, because they have to come up with data that knocks our data out of the ballpark. They don't have any data, and they're ignoring ours, and that certainly isn't enough of a legal basis to pursue this project. On to the legal basis of pursuing this project. I've spoken to a couple of the city council members. I've read the city attorney's for Goleta comments on the draft EIR, or the previous one, and even their comments as of yesterday, and they can't understand why the, I'm sorry, I'm too used to the word polluter, why the developer is not, and the state board is not paying enough attention to their legal position. I heard, quote, our legal position. whose, Venico's or the State Land Commission's legal position? I know, it is the same thing, isn't it? That's scary. Is it Venico? I know it's Venico's legal position, that they have the legal right to do it. I also know that it's Santa Barbara's city attorney's stand that it is not your right. I don't know what the State Lands Commission's legal stand on it. It sounds like the report written by the developer for you guys says that they don't have the right. So we've got City of Santa Barbara, City of Goleta, both who say, hang on a minute, we don't think at all you've got the legal standings to do this, but we didn't hear that tonight. That's a problem. The objective, okay, back to pressure. If water is flooding in, why does he want to remove the oil? Why can't he just have pressure release on the water as it comes in? I think I know the answer, but I'm making a point. Right? We could let water leak out, or we could let oil leak out. One is going to make one man very rich. The objective of the project is what we object to. The objective of the project is not to relieve pressure that they are ignoring data on and supposing exists. And I don't think so. I agree completely with my compatriots that the objective of this whole thing, just like it was in Carpinteria and the Elwood land or the Elwood lease consolidations, every other move that this man has made in the last 5 years is all about magnifying his extraction of oil. It could not be in a more environmentally delicate place. Astonishing that it even got this far for consideration. I want to know that if performance of oil extracting technology was as bad as it was in the 60s with all the industry's assurances, and it happened, and the 90s with all the oil companies' assurances, and it happened, and then Deepwater Horizon and all of the insurances and best technology, and it happened, how on earth can we, no offense, with a straight face, accept that it won't happen? In fact, we can't, because your own presentation says unavoidable and severe impacts. No manner of engineering or preparation can mitigate its happening. We heard it here. So I think I'm done. We are shocked again at our lack of notification. A number of us just closed escrow on the houses of our dreams, and our developer didn't tell us, and our city representatives didn't tell us, and Venico didn't tell us, and a state land commission did not tell us. And I know that that's a violation of Brown Acts, and I know that's a violation of public participation laws. So I'm shocked, and this needs to happen. And there are legal reasons, there are environmental reasons, and there are simple goodwill, good ethics reasons. And all of them point to making this thing go away. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Elizabeth. Next we have Jean Holmes. And then our last speaker is Margaret Connell.
Now, that's a hard act to follow. What I have to say is short and simple, but it does express the concerns of the public. The League of Women Voters has many times voiced its concerns about the risks involved in reactivating Pier 421. At the EIR, when it lists Class 1 impacts to biological resources in the event of an oil spill, confirms our concerns. Therefore, the League would like to stress the importance of prevention. We believe that an extra level of training and testing via unscheduled drills should be included in the mitigations. Also, the infrastructure involved in this project is basically old and will be older yet before it is finished. There's also a prediction that we are going to experience very heavy winter storms in the future. And an earthquake is always a possibility here. Therefore, an extra level of diligence is needed this time to the maintenance and inspections of the infrastructure throughout the life of the project. We have been told that Pier 421 is the last oil well in a surf zone off the California coast. Consequently, it is necessary, if it is necessary, to put this in operation again, the league asks that it should be done with the most stringent protections possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. And then Margaret Connell is our last speaker.
I think one of the questions that is emerging from all this discussion today is, what is the purpose, what is the interest of the state, in other words, the State Lands Commission, in the outcome of this? Is it related to pressurization and possible leaks, or is it related to allowing the oil company to increase oil production? And that's the answer to either of those solutions are very different. In looking at the issue of repressurization, which obviously could be a concern to the community and to the environment, I would ask that nothing should happen without some kind of test as to whether, in fact, there is a buildup. We've heard some people speak of there being no evidence of any repressurization, and it seems like there has to be some way of testing that other than restarting the pumping. So that's one concern. The whole legal issue of whether there's a vested right, I can't really comment on that. But again, that's an important question. If there's no vested right and there's no community interest in restarting, then that puts the whole proposal in a very different context than if you are assuming there is a vested right, and so what's the best way to manage it? The EIR and the environmental preferable alternative makes the assumption that this oil will go into the EOF. There is, in fact, no guarantee of that. Whether it goes in the EOF depends on the decisions of another body, a local body, the Goleta City Council. And there's no guarantee of that. If it doesn't, if the Goleta Council says no, then either the project goes ahead with processing on the pier, which is obviously very undesirable, or it comes to a halt. The whole vesting issue might also bring it to a halt. One other issue I want to raise is that it says in the EIR that there is no analysis of the hydraulic fracturing because Veneco is not proposing to do it at this time. And I can understand you can't analyze something on speculation about something in the future. On the other hand, it is part of the complex of looking at this proposal. If that is a possibility in the future, then the timelines that are proposed here, the 20-year timeline or whatever, and the amount of oil, could be very different if, in fact, at some point, hydraulic fracturing comes into the picture. So, again, I think while I understand why you would not be looking into this now, I think it is a factor that decision makers have to look at in making a decision on this project. So thank you. I will submit something in writing, too.
Okay, thank you, Margaret. That's it for public speakers, unless anybody else has anything. Okay. Well, thank you, everybody, for providing your comments here today. As far as next steps go, we're transcribing this meeting as well as it's being televised. We'll take your comments, and then the end of the comment period is December 20th. So when we receive, I'm sure we'll receive more letters next week, and then we'll take those comments and digest them and prepare them into a final EIR, which we anticipate coming out early next year. And then following that, this project would be considered by the commission, as well as the certification of the EIR in the early 2014. We're going to have another meeting at 6 o'clock. It's going to be the same format and same information. It's just another venue for folks who couldn't make it in the afternoon meeting. So, again, I just want to thank everybody for coming this afternoon, and we'll close the meeting. Thank you. Anybody has any questions of him? Get started here. Thank you for coming to this public meeting for the revised PRC 421 Recommissioning Project Draft Environmental Impact Report. If you haven't done so, there's sign-in sheets when you come through the door in the front, as well as speaker slips if you wish to speak on the project. I'm Eric Gillis with the California State Lands Commission. I'm a project manager on this project. We have Holly Weyer, who is deputy project manager on this project, as well as Rita Bright, is our environmental consultant from AMEC Earth and Environment. The California State Lands Commission is the lead agency under the California Environmental Quality Act and has prepared this draft document for public review and comment. This meeting's not only being televised, but we're transcribing it to be sure we have everybody's comments on this document. The purpose of this meeting is basically to get public input on the adequacy of the environmental impact report. The project's being proposed by Venneco to recommission two piers off the coast of the city of Goleta. Steve Gregg from Venneco is here, and he's in the audience. We released the public draft document on October 18th for a 60-day public review period, and comments in Friday, December 20th, a week from Friday. The document's available on our website at www.slc.ca.gov, as well as also found at the local libraries, and we do have a extra copy here if anybody needs one. We're going to go ahead, and I'll have AMEC, Rita from AMEC, do a presentation on the project and the EIR, and then we'll open it up for public comment, and then let you know next steps following that. So I'll let Rita take over.
Good evening. Thank you, Eric. My name is Rita Bright, and I am a senior project manager, CEQA, with AMEC. As Eric mentioned, the purpose of the public hearing is to provide the public with an overview of the project, to summarize the issues as well as the public concerns that have been expressed to date on this project, to summarize the project alternatives and impacts, and to receive your comments on the adequacy of the environmental document. For a brief project overview, we also have this aerial photo with some key components of the project labeled on the easel, and you're welcome to take a closer look at that if you'd like. This project involves a reactivation of well 421-2, which would include new electrical submersible pump within the well, well safety equipment, and repairs to reinforce Pier 421-2's deck and caissons. There would also be modifications to the Elwood onshore facility, which is this area right in here. Again, here's the shoreline. And here are the two piers in question, or two piers that are part of the project description, 421-2 and 421-1. So there would be modifications of the Elwood onshore facility to accommodate Pier 421-2's production. That would include installation of production metering and process monitoring equipment. And there would also be pipeline and cables installed. There's a cross-section of the pipeline and cables where the roadway easement is that runs parallel to the shoreline. And here's the existing seawall and the bulkhead and the existing easement. And this shows you where the electrical conduit would be. And this shows you where the line would be for the transfer of the oil for processing. In terms of Pier 421-1 and the well, this portion of this project would include the plugging and decommissioning of the well of 421-1, including removal of the pier caissons. It would connect piping between 421-1 and 421-2. It would involve the decommissioning of the connecting piping between the two piers. And it would also involve the removal of ancillary supporting facilities. The estimated production of the Pier 421-2 project would be approximately 150 barrels per day initially for the first month, and then it would level off to approximately 50 barrels per day after about 2 years of operation. And it would probably, it's estimated that it would match the last 10 years of continuous historical production. Some of the key issues of public concern, and of course this is not exhaustive, but this is some of the major issues that have been identified and through the NOP scoping meeting, include, does Venico have a vested right to resume production at PRC 421? Will the project extend the life of the Elwood onshore facility? What repressurization has occurred so far, and what is the risk of well failure? Does the reactivated well represent a new source? And why can't the production be piped to Las Flores Canyon for processing? With respect to vested rights, Fenico contends that it has a legal right under the contract with the California State Lands Commission to resume oil production, to resume the production of both oil and gas lease at PRC 421. The issue of these rights of operation is an issue that is not within the scope of CEQA, of the environmental analysis, but rather it's a discussion which will be provided in the staff report to the commission as other information which may be presented to the agency. And there is a citation on the PowerPoint regarding the state CEQA guidelines 15121, which describes the scope of CEQA analysis as well. With respect to the life of the Elwood onshore facility, the project as proposed would not extend the life of the Elwood onshore facility. In the event that Platform Holly production ceases and Platform Holly is decommissioned, PRC 421's production would also cease, and then it would go through the decommissioning phase of the project. This would be carried through as a condition of approval. One of the major issues involved with this project is repressurization, and this issue goes back at least as far as 2001, when the California State Lands Commission staff determined that the Vaqueros Reservoir had repressurized. And the figure shows the increase in wellhead pressure from 1988 to 2000. You can see the trend of increased pressurization. The increase in pressure in the Vaqueros Reservoir is thought to have caused leaking in both PRC 421 wellheads in 2000 after being shut in for 6 years. In response to the detection of these leaks, Veneco installed a temporary pipeline at well 421-2, and when 421-2 was subsequently opened, a flow of estimated amount of 17,000 barrels of nearly pure oil flowed over the subsequent 10 months. Engineers at Veneco and the California State Land Commission staff determined that repressurization is most likely being caused by aquifer influx, which is a natural groundwater movement. Also noted, there are at least 21 of the 72 offshore wells drilled into the Vaqueros Reservoir from piers had potential deficiencies in their historic abandonment procedures, which could also make them more vulnerable to leakage. A lot of these wells are more decades plus old with different standards, and some also with, because of their historical nature, would not be wells that would be conformance to current standards and safety standards and capping standards. Currently, there is no active well penetrating the reservoir into which pressure testing equipment can be inserted. And this was an issue that has been raised a few times, a number of times, regarding the ability to test, pressure test the reservoir. And there are no, within the Vaqueros Reservoir, there are no active wells, so there are no other well options that could be used at this point in time to do a pressurized test. A static reservoir pressure will be taken from well 421-2 prior to resumption of production. Static pressure measurements will also be obtained annually during the Elwood onshore facility shutdown to be used in the analysis of repressurization. So once the project, if it was approved and in operation, there would be ongoing monitoring during the life of the project. Another issue raises, is this a new source of, is this a net increase in production? Oil and gas processing facilities would not expand beyond the current permitted quantities. Improvements to the Elwood onshore facility to allow PRC 421 production may be considered an enlargement, an expansion, or an extension of what is presently considered and recognized by the City of Goleta as a nonconforming use. And such nonconforming use expansions, enlargements, or extensions would be viewed to be inconsistent with the Goleta Municipal Code. So this is an ongoing issue that will be studied, of the nature, the status of the nonconforming uses and facility of the Elwood onshore facility. The EIR recognizes that resumption of production at PRC 421 would therefore be inconsistent with the City of Goleta's general plan, coastal plan policies, and they're cited here. But in recognition of this inconsistency, the EIR also finds that impacts to land use are considered significant and unavoidable. Another issue that has been raised involves the concept of a alternative where processing would occur at the Las Flores Canyon. PRC 421 production would remain in a three-phase state. It would be an oil, gas, and water state before it's transported to processing at Las Flores Canyon. Therefore, the existing Line 96, and Line 96, let's see if I can show you. This is a recently approved and operating line. The EIR was certified, I believe, in 2011, and it goes along 101, and it travels about 8.5 miles westerly, northwesterly, towards Las Flores Canyon. That line transfers oil. It doesn't transfer a combined state as the PR, or rather PRC 421 production would provide. So in order to transfer that to Las Flores Canyon, there would require construction of another pipeline that would have similar impacts and require similar types of mitigations as the Line 96 modification project. And ancillary requirements would also include installation of larger pumps at Pier 421-2. Because of the extent of improvements required and the fact that Las Flores Canyon would also have to require new facilities or new equipment to process, this alternative was considered infeasible based on extensive construction impacts and cost. So the EIR, in conclusion, evaluated numerous resource areas and found that there were 16 class or significant and unavoidable impacts, which means that no matter how much conditioning or mitigation you put on a project, the effects upon the environment would remain significant. 13 are related to potential oil spill effects on the environment. Either at Pier 421-2, the flow lines, or Line 96. And some of the subject areas you can see in red include aesthetics, safety, hydrology, marine and terrestrial biology, land use, planning, and recreation. Three of these significant impacts are related to increased processing at the Elwood onshore facility or additional impacts on public services, including fire protection services. There are a number of other impacts to the environment identified, and these are considered potentially significant impacts, but mitigable, which means that there are conditions that are feasible that could reduce impacts to what are considered less than significant in accordance with established CEQA guideline thresholds. And I won't, I think you can all read that. I won't go into itemizing all of those. There were all alternatives identified in the EIR, which is required by state law. And one alternative is always the no project alternative. There was also alternatives including oil processing on Pier 421-2, the reinjection at Platform Holly. And these were alternatives that were further evaluated in the EIR with their impacts compared to with the project and the no project alternative. There were alternatives that were considered but found to no longer to not be feasible for carrying out, and those could be that they do not meet some of the project objectives. That doesn't mean they have to wholly meet the project objectives, but they did not meet some of the project objectives, that they could result in greater impacts to the environment, or that because of technical requirements they may be found to be infeasible. Those are some of the bases for dismissing alternatives. And again, under CEQA, you need to evaluate a reasonable range of alternatives that does not require an exhaustive set of alternatives. And again, these are some of the alternatives that were dismissed, and their rationale is included in the EIR. Based on the EIR analysis, the proposed project has been identified as the environmentally superior alternative. The no project alternative would not allow for the opportunity for pressure testing. Thus, the risks of spills from repressurization could still remain. The proposed project would best reduce significant and unavoidable impacts to many resource areas. However, many of these impacts remain significant and unavoidable. So in other words, you can have a significant impact and it may have less of an impact than another project, but it could still remain significant to the environment. That concludes my summary of the EIR, and I invite you to continue to study the EIRs, the draft EIR, during this public comment period.
Yeah, you could submit. Sorry. Comments could be submitted via email, as you see on the slide. It's sequacomments@slc.ca.gov, as well as mail to our Sacramento office and on the address on the screen. I'll go ahead. We have two speakers that want to speak on the project, or three now. You could bring it up to me. Thanks. Okay, we'll go ahead and have Elizabeth Crawford, and then following Elizabeth, we'll have Mark Foster, and then Carrie Riley.
Thank you for the opportunity. Is this on? There we go. Okay, very good. Thank you for the opportunity. At the 3 o'clock meeting, like I said, I was just processing everything that had come new to us, new to me, new to my new fellow residents, and so if I was overly enthusiastic, I apologize, but I think it's all good. I think that this is completely relevant to all of the experiences that I've ever had with the Rocketdyne Santa Susana field lab cleanup involving nuclear waste, rocket waste, burn waste, ashes, and so forth. And so the methodology is exactly the same. The agencies are exactly the same. CEQA is exactly the same. So unfortunately, this is a nightmare redux. Number one, my neighbors and I were never noticed at all. Again, I'm repeating it, and so I'll just go through real quickly with little of the editorial because I want to catch them up. That is a violation of federal law, violation of state law, certainly a violation of somebody's charter, either the city of Goleta or, no offense, yours. So that needs to be managed so that we can be brought into this. While I sat here, I listened to Environmental Defense Council, Sierra Club, Santa Barbara Channel Keepers, and a lot of informed and expert people who came to share all of their knowledge and wisdom and input. So I'm going to just summarize that for this particular record so that my comments are certainly taken orally, and I will supply them written as well, in why this EIR, draft EIR, is, I'm sorry, completely inadequate. Number one, it has been established that the pressurization at all is deeply in question. Venico and state land commissions have done zero tests whatsoever to verify the premise upon which this, radical development and project that just dropped into our laps is based upon. Number two, Venico and the State Lands Commission is ignoring data that does exist from vapor monitors that have been set up in this oil field that is supposedly building up under pressure based on aquifer influx. Let me repeat that. Venico says this has to happen because it's building up, but they are not offering any data, and the state is not requiring it to prove that. And Venico and the state are ignoring the data that does exist. So I question the premise of this whole project. Not only that, let's move on past that. If water is intruding onto the space that the oil in this oil field occupies, they could remove the water, but they don't. They take the oil out. Would you rather have water spilled or oil? Again, spurious basis for this whole project. Number three, it is one single private individual who's been driving this thing for the past 5 years at our mid-coast. His name is Tony Marquez. He took his company private so that there's no public scrutiny. He took and purchased, is trying to purchase all of the manufacturing wells away from his company so that he owns all of the extraction. He tried it at Carpinteria. He then, they kicked him out. He then, they